Y'all, we are back. I'm so excited, Anya, this is going to be such a good, fun topic. Yay.
I cannot wait. I'm so excited that I got an honorary pimple this morning, just in time for this podcast.
Y'all, we were talking about acne today.
Yes, a topic that is so, so near and dear to our hearts, as we both struggled with this a lot last year, and now came out mostly on the other side. So we understand the trials and tribulations of acne sufferers for sure.
Oh, for sure. I have now what's called acne PTSD. And those that have had acne issues and cleared it up, they know what this means. And it's like you get a tiny little bit of a pimple. You're like, I'm done for. It's coming back. It's like,
oh,
no, it's
I
not.
Know
You're
exactly
fine.
What you mean. Yeah, so many people know what this means. And I was actually looking at some statistics on acne in preparation for this podcast. And I think it was something, I'm trying to remember the exact number, but over 50 million Americans suffer from acne, which is insane that it's so big and so prevalent. Yet, like, really, really, the conventional approach, I feel like, is so misunderstood. So I'm excited to kind of give people some more answers as to how to heal and why this is happening.
Yeah, we're going to end in the nitty-gritties, guys. Anya and I both, this is very dear to our heart. So we're going to get into all of it. So I think the best thing that we could do to start with is, what are the different types of acne first? Let's go over the different types of acne, how conventional medicine approaches it. And then we can talk about how to heal your acne from the inside out, because all of it matters, guys, all of it.
Mm-hmm. Sounds great. So, you know, in terms of types of acne, I think that we can divide into two main categories, right? So there's that non-inflammatory and inflammatory acne. And non-inflammatory acne is kind of like what it sounds like. It's generally like it doesn't really cause swelling of the skin. And it's usually things like blackheads or whiteheads, which are pretty much what the names that kind of suggest they are. You know, blackheads have that open pore, whereas the whiteheads are closed off, so they usually have a white or flesh colored appearance.
Yes, and this is the type that's honestly like easiest to treat with the conventional topicals. Most of the time, I don't see blackheads and just those regular closed comedones, those whiteheads, be actually a situation that's coming from like internal. So if you're having a blackhead, most likely, unfortunately, it's because there's trapped dead skin. That's lack of exfoliation for the most part, or, you know, not washing your face accordingly. You know, your pillow is dirty all the time. You don't wash it routinely. So that's the types of the non-inflammatory acne. That's typically where you want to go down the route of maybe a salicylic acid, glycolic acid, retinol. Of course, there's different situations, different types, but most of the time, this is easier to fix than the inflammatory.
Yeah, absolutely. And definitely before we even go into all the treatment, topical treatments, let's just go right off the bat and say, never try and extract these yourself.
Speaking from experience.
Yes. It'll for sure cause scarring, no matter how gentle you think you are. Go to a professional and make sure, again, just ask for a very gentle approach. Don't force things to come out unless they're actually ready, especially with whiteheads and those closed comedones. Really like just being patient with that consistent exfoliation can be super helpful for those.
Yes. And we're going to talk about more about like how much to exfoliate, the downsides of exfoliating, and how that can make things worse for some people. But yes, so we've got blackheads, whiteheads, non-inflammatory acne, and then we've got the lovely inflammatory lesions that can also occur. So we have a combination of pustules, papules, nodules, and cysts, which all are very lovely in their own world. So if you have any questions, what is my acne? If you want to Google, you know, inflammatory acne, papules versus pustules versus nodules versus cysts, please do that. We could definitely describe to what some of those are. For example, cysts are the ones that are the fluid filled. You cannot pop them. They're painful. They're demons. And if you try and pop them, they're going to leave a vicious scar for probably years on years on years. Anya, do you mind telling us about the difference between papules and pustules?
Yeah, so papules and pustules are pretty similar, but the pustules kind of have this sort of lighter top or coloring, kind of similar to those like closed comedones that we're talking about, but they are definitely more painful to the touch. But both of them usually like have like some swelling and, you know, again, they're driven by inflammation as well.
Right. And the pustules are going to have that like tip on it to where you can see that fluid in there, white or yellow, that pus, whereas that papule is just kind of going to have kind of like a little reddish type of film. So it's not the fact that you can like squeeze and pull like the fluid out of it. And then both of them can be driven, of course, that all these inflammatory types of acne, these can be driven from the internal issues that we're going to discuss too.
Absolutely. And, you know, 99% of the time, that's really the driving cause. It's very rare that it's a topical factor that's causing the sort of inflammatory acne.
Yeah. Unless, of course, you're like me and you have sensitive skin and you break out from a damaged skin barrier, in which you can have pustules or papules or cysts form because of a damaged skin barrier. The body actually does upregulate sebum production when it has that damaged skin barrier. And of course, you can have irritation and inflammation and cysts happen if you have that occur. So I just want to throw that out there too.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And Lacey, what would you say can cause a damaged skin barrier?
Oof. Overdoing actives for sure. Mm-hmm. So that can include glycolic, salicylic, retinol. It could be doing multiple ingredients that your body doesn't like too. So sometimes that could be fragrances that you're doing. Some people are very even sensitive to using hyaluronic acid. So it can be the fact that you're using an ingredient that your skin does not necessarily like. And the worst part is too, like if you're in a drier climate, if you combine the dryness with an acid, that can damage your skin barrier because it dehydrates too.
For sure. And I'd also add sun. Excessive sun and UV can also really contribute to that damage. And that if you have a damaged skin barrier, the number one first step is you have to repair it before you do any sort of actives. Other ways, like you just mentioned, it's going to cause more harm than good. So sometimes when you have acne, it's really hard to be patient. You want to go right ahead and start treating. I've been there, I get it, but sometimes you just really need to focus on repairing the barrier first before you slowly add in actives.
Yeah. And I'm just going to throw in a part of our story because Ani and I both went through this, where tretinoin, or retinol completely destroyed our skin for months on end. So just know that sometimes your body can truly, like, retinol is one of the top topical treatments, and we'll talk about that more, but it's one of the top topical treatments for acne of inflammatory or non-inflammatory, basis. But unfortunately, it definitely trashed our skin, and it can take months for that to heal when you do have a damaged skin barrier. And we could talk about like the different things that you could do to like also help to support it and to heal it. But just something to keep in mind is once it's damaged, you've got to come off of all those actives. You've got to support the barrier and you've got to support hydration for sure and give it time.
Absolutely. That's such a good point. In terms of other types of acne, I guess like one thing maybe, Lacey, we want to just touch on is rosacea, which is, you know, kind of similar to acne, but a little different. So how would you tell someone how to differentiate between the two?
So there's different types of rosacea. So we have the erythrema, we have the flushing, and then we have the pastoral papular acne, which is basically kind of like having those pustules and those whiteheads in different places around your nose, your mouth, up in to your cheeks, combined with a little bit of redness or flushing. And so with rosacea, sometimes the rosacea is triggered by histamine. Sometimes it's a gut infection, food intolerance, or other times it's the fact that you have some shape or form of, you know, Demodex mites, which can cause rosacea as well. But for the most part, the difference with rosacea versus regular acne is the rosacea is going to have some shape or form of a little bit of that redness and that flushing. And the rosacea definitely does not respond well at all to any shape or form of exfoliants. And the skin with rosacea is a lot more sensitive. So that's the type of skin that I see, like even a barrier support product sometimes cause a flushing or cause a reaction.
Yeah. And so if you do feel like you might have rosacea, if you have any of those signs that you just mentioned, definitely it needs to be treated topically, very quite differently than traditional acne. But internally, those causes can actually be very similar to acne.
1,000%. Yes, they definitely can be. I'm just going to throw out for anybody that has rosacea. I really like metronidazole and ivermectin and azelaic acid. Those are the top three. And if you do struggle with rosacea, please be very careful. I would stay away from acids. I would definitely stay away from retinol because that can really damage your skin barrier and cause that flushing to get worse for you. So you got to go from within because most of the time, and Anya probably agrees with me, most of the time rosacea comes from the gut.
Yes, 100%. And I mean, almost all skin issues. Whenever yep. there's a skin issue, I just kind of think instantly, I'm like, gut issue until proven otherwise. Because it just almost always there is such a strong connection between the two. And it's crazy how solving the gut and how improving that can improve your skin. And I think, you know, a lot of people might experience this like on more micro levels. So like if you've ever gotten a stomach bug or like some sort of like food poisoning and you notice that you got a big breakout around that time, that's a perfect example of your skin manifesting a gut issue.
Now, when it comes down to acne, let's dive into how to heal it. And I think the most important thing that we need to assess would be, of course, external factors first, like we mentioned, the pillowcases. So let's dive into the external factors that can cause acne first and foremost, and then we'll dive into the others.
Yeah, so basically think of anything that's coming into contact with your skin on a daily basis. So aside from pillowcases, makeup is huge. I'm a really big fan of trying to be, foundation or concealer free as much as you can. Even the non-pore clogging brands, I would try and just let your skin breathe as much as you can. Some other external factors, a big one would be heat. Which is difficult because I love heat, I love saunas, I love hot yoga, but for a lot of people, it can cause further irritation and inflammation. And especially if you're doing hot yoga and you're putting your face on a dirty mat or towel, that can breed bacteria and cause more issues as well. Another thing too that I think of is electronics. Are you putting your phone to your face? Are you mm-hmm. falling asleep like on your Kindle? Are you using big headphones that are like really covering your cheeks? Things like that also can contribute.
Yeah, I definitely see that as a big issue. And also I see a lot of people that necessarily they don't change their washcloth too, like on an ongoing basis. So if you're using a dirty washcloth and just reusing that, that's just re-inoculating your skin with bacteria. And then also, which is gross, and I think this is like something that a lot of people forget about. If you look at your sink and you look under your sink and you're looking at the water that you're washing your face with, if there's any shape or form of like residue, that's continuously getting on your skin too. So there could be a lot of factors with that that can influence your skin.
Yeah, I really like for instead of face cloths, just using disposable towels. There's this company, Clean Skin Club. You could buy it on Amazon, which I think is great for that. Or just letting your face just like air dry and then applying your moisturizer when it's still slightly damp actually can help lock that moisture in. Yeah. And then you don't have to even deal with that sort of like, dirty washcloth.
Yeah. And then there's the makeup. Like if something is considered quote unquote non-comedogenic, which I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, but the key thing is that is not even regulated. So there are some like websites that you can go to. ClearStem Skincare has them, but you can just Google pore clogging ingredient checker. And there are some certain ingredients, like for some people that's coconut oil, shea butter. There's a lot of different ingredients in makeup as well as in your shampoos and your conditioners and even moisturizers and the products you put in your skin that can clog your skin. It does not always mean that is going to clog your skin. For some people, it might not, but it's a great opportunity if you do have acne, especially if you struggle with whiteheads and blackheads and it's kind of like an ongoing thing for you. Check and see if there's anything in your makeup or your skincare, or like I said, shampoo and conditioner, because that also can create acne and blackheads, especially around your hairline, to make sure that there's nothing externally that you could remove to help you out.
Yeah. And you could think about this stuff maybe too, if you have long hair and you're putting on like some sort of hair products and then it's getting on your face when you sleep. So that could cause breakouts. I really like the company Scene. It's developed by dermatologists for hair products that are non-comedogenic. And, I also would say that in terms of the like sort of like makeup sort of thing, I agree. Pore clog, or what is it? It's pore clogging ingredient checker. If you just Google it, you find it is really solid, and I use that a lot for pretty much everything, even things like lipstick. Or toothpaste too is another huge one that can cause a lot of like breakouts right around the mouth if you're letting it kind of dribble down. So make sure you get an SLS free toothpaste. The brand Jason makes a good one for people who are really sensitive.
Ooh, and that'll piss rosacea off. Fluoride mm-hmm. and SLS. And even with, and I know this is not all about rosacea, but like if you have rosacea, any shape or form of SLS, even in your shampoo and conditioner, that can exacerbate it.
Yeah. Yeah, it sucks, but sometimes you got to do this big clean out. And then once you're clear, you can try reintroducing some of your favorite products and see if it makes you break out.
So speaking of external factors, that can also be, like we said, overdoing your actives, or that could be an ingredient that could potentially even be soothing that your body does or your skin does not respond well to. So there are some barrier repair products, some fantastic products like Dr. Jart. He has a great ceramide lotion, but I break out if I use that. So just know that sometimes just because something works for somebody else, that can actually be an acne trigger for you, whether that's causing inflammation or it's causing your skin to be sensitive or irritated, that can trigger acne as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember when I was little, I thought that like the redder my face was and the more it was burning and tingling, like the better, that it was just same. Like, you know, searing off my acne, but that's not the case at all. You know, when you start a new active, a little bit of pinkness, you know, in that first 5 to 10 minutes is okay. And that should dissipate. But if that continues or it's accompanied by any of those other sort of negative sensations, mm-hmm. you probably need to back out and either do something more gentle or introduce it more gradually.
Right. And I'm going to bring up two more that I think are very important. Number one, making sure to wash your face after every single time that you sweat or you go to the gym. And I don't mean like wait 3 hours. I mean like wash your face immediately after, because think about all that sweat that's just getting clogged and stuck on your skin. And then second thing, if your boyfriend has a beard, just think about what's been on that all day.
Oh yeah, that's a really good point. And I'd also say not only beard, but the scruff I think is very underrated, because that could also cause a lot of abrasion and irritation.
So sorry,
boys, you also could be involved in this process. So don't be afraid to maybe, you know, give your man a little grooming advice.
Anya, your beard burn gave me PTSD.
Never forgot. I'm still recovering from that.
Oh no. Yeah. So those are the top external factors. Anything that you think that we missed?
Those are the big ones.
Cool. And you guys that are listening to my podcast should not be having a lot of fragrances and all the fluffy things that you're putting on your, you know, your sheets and laundry detergents and like laundry boosters, all that type of stuff. But just know if you do have rosacea or sensitive skin, that can manifest in acne or skin irritation or a damaged skin barrier as well.
Absolutely.
Cool.
No right. fragrances.
Yes. All right. Moving on. Anya, I'll let you go. What are the next causes of acne?
Yeah, so there are so many other internal causes. So we've mentioned this, but I think we can dive further into it. But gut issues are really, really huge. So any sort of overgrowth, whether that's bacteria, parasites, yeast, absolutely can cause acne. Any sort of inflammation also related to these, or that's stemming from the gut, can cause systemic inflammation is a big one. You know, you want to think also that your skin, just like your gut, has a microbiome, and that the two are very intrinsically linked. So when there is an imbalance between the good and bad bacteria in your gut, quote unquote, dysbiosis, that'll manifest in the skin as well. And that also can cause issues.
Mm-hmm. And I really do find candida and parasites, those are big demons that cause a lot of cystic acne. And I see a lot of acne in regards to like under the chin, which we'll talk about face mapping, but a lot of digestive related inflammation related acne down in that chin area. And then with yeast as well, I see it up onto the cheeks and then the forehead.
Yeah, it is actually. I never really believed in face mapping until I really started working with people and I started noticing these patterns. It's really interesting.
Do we want to talk about that now, or do we want to keep going on the gut?
Yeah, I mean, I think let's dive a little bit further
Okay.
in. So, like, what would you say are the like most common patterns that you see in terms of face mapping?
I definitely see, like I said, like digestion. I see that down at the chin. I also see that hormonal. So like that jawline acne, that can be high testosterone or even 5-alpha reductase related. So your testosterone may look normal, but if you do something like a Dutch test, your 5-alpha reductase is high, indicating high DHT. I see a lot of cheeks. I see that come from the gut, low stomach acid, H. pylori, candida, but I also see like malnutrition or nutrient deficiencies with that as well. And then many times with that hairline acne, I see that in regards to like just simply hair products. So those are the things that I see. Forehead and nose acne, I do see those as well, kind of be like sluggish detoxification or an inflammatory diet. And then anything that's causing acne, like around the cheeks, I also see as poor lymphatic detoxification or poor drainage.
Yeah, I agree. And I would also add that like that cheek acne, it tends to be more inflammatory. And I see that a lot with dairy sensitivities. We'll go into dairy and food in more detail, but I really, whenever I see someone that has that sort of inflammatory acne on their cheeks, I almost always immediately say, let's do a dairy-free trial. And I'd say like 99% of the time, that correlates with an improvement. It's really interesting.
Yeah, and dairy free also means whey protein, you guys. Now, it doesn't mean
Oh,
everybody's
yeah.
going to respond to that, but I think the first thing really, and we're going to go over more of this, but like if you have acne, the first thing that you've got to do is you've got to cut down on inflammatory things in your diet, added sugars, dairy, processed vegetable oils, and we're going to dive into all that. But yeah, cheeks big time. I agree with you, dairy.
Yes.
Any other things that you see?
In terms of face mapping,
Face mapping, yes.
I'd also say that like that forehead acne I see a lot with any sort of fungal issues. So candida, but also things like mold, I see that as well. And that's usually like a lot of those like kind of like closed comedones on the forehead, I find correlate with that.
Yeah, for sure. And if anybody also deals with kind of like, so with rosacea, you can also get like a slightly bigger nose or a papule kind of nose. So sometimes with that is a combination of course, yes, rosacea, but I see a lot of toxic buildup and poor circulation, poor lymphatic drainage with that too.
Yeah. Oh, I'd also add to that the neck acne.
Oh, I
So if you're
completely
getting,
forgot about neck acne.
yeah, neck acne. I just made that up, but I see that a lot with detox issues. So any sort of toxicity or like, sluggish liver, sluggish detox pathways, I really see that correlate with those neck pimples or those breakouts along the neck, especially that like upper neck where it connects to your jawline.
Yeah. And then you can have chest acne too. Sometimes that's just chest or back acne. Sometimes that can be the fact that you are just not washing your own skin very well or exfoliating well. And there's a lot of buildup. But other times there can be bacterial imbalances in the gut. I see, especially with candida and SIBO, there to be acne, especially if it's like kind of like just like bumps, those papules. I see that develop as well. And then, but. Anya, do you see a connection with buttocks acne? Because I typically see that just kind of like be topical related.
I haven't had too many clients tell me about that, but the ones that have, usually I just recommend a like good acne body wash and it
Yeah.
solves it pretty quickly. And I say don't, I usually ask how soon after you work out are you showering? And almost always it's like an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. So from my experience anecdotally, I feel like there really is more of a topical external connection with that.
Yeah, I fully agree. Okay, so back to the gut. We, aka you, talked about pathogens. So we talked about that, whether it's candida, parasites, SIBO, just overall dysbiosis. And that can also include a lack of beneficial bacteria. So insufficiency dysbiosis, that can occur, H. pylori, low stomach acid. That's definitely an issue. Other things that can stem from the pathogens, then you can have nutrient deficiencies. And the key thing is with acne, sometimes that could be low stomach acid. low bile. It could be the fact that you have a pathogen stealing away your nutrients, but most of the time, a deficiency with acne, I see a lack of Bs, especially B6, and I see zinc. Sometimes we also see vitamin D deficient, and then your minerals too. If you have any shape or form of gut infection, sometimes your minerals can be off, and that can cause you to have acne as well. What else do you see on the deficiency standpoint?
Those are the biggest ones, I think. You know, I'd also say that, like, along those lines, when there is sort of like a malabsorption issue and or some sort of, you know, imbalance of good and bad bacteria or overgrowth, we see increased intestinal permeability, aka leaky gut, right? So that's, again, like increasing your toxic buildup and burden in the body. And those toxins are going to try and get out somehow, and they're going to try and get out through your skin. So that I see happen a lot with acne.
Yeah, I fully agree. And then I also forgot to mention, some people can be deficient in omega-3 fatty acids too. And unfortunately, that, as well as vitamin E, if you don't have those two, you can actually have like a damaged and sensitive skin barrier. So that can manifest in acne as well.
Yeah, good point.
So if you deal with acne, and this is what I do with all my clients, I definitely suggest get a gut test and get a full nutrient test done for sure.
Yes. And I also say this kind of will tie into our next topic, but having gut issues, you know, what stays in the gut or what happens in the gut doesn't stay in the gut. So it's going to affect other systems in the body, and it almost always will affect your hormones. And having imbalanced hormones and, you know, hormonal issues are truly, I think, like secondary to gut, like one of the most common causes that I see for acne.
The hormonal acne is the worst too, because you can feel like you are a beautiful human, and then right before your period, it's like a couple zits pop up and you're like, oh no, this is how I die. So you guys, we definitely relate for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's and let me also say like one or two or even like three little pimples before your period, that's okay. That's right. Normal. But when what we're talking more about, what's more of a concern is when you have a lot of hormonal acne, especially, again, it's usually like mostly around like your jawline, like that lower face area, that really tends to be the one that's caused by hormonal issues.
Mm-hmm. And if it's ever cystic in nature, that can potentially leave a scar. And that's the type of acne that you don't want to say, oh, that's normal. So if it's a little whitehead or pustule that's popping up right before your period, that's completely normal. Sometimes I want to cry about it, but like, don't, you're fine. But if it's multiple that are popping up or they're painful, cystic, or causing scars, that's when you need to dig deeper into figuring out, okay, what is going on here?
Yeah. So Lacey, why don't you explain, like, why is it that hormonal issues cause acne?
It's a couple things that can happen. So sometimes with our period, of course, we can have like high androgen levels. So most of the time this actually manifests into that jawline acne. And I see that because it increases sebum production. And so not only do you have like increased blockage of the skin itself, but you also have increase in sebum, causing the potential for like those more painful, heavier types of acne. And with the high androgens, I also see an issue when it comes down to like exfoliation. And then we have the estrogen dominance issues, which I actually see more of like the cheek-based acne and the lower kind of like cheek-based acne. But with that, we also have an upregulation in sebum, but we also have more of like oily skin in general, and that causes that inflammatory acne to develop.
Yeah, and let me also say that with these sort of imbalances, there's usually other symptoms aside from just acne, right? So if there are high androgens, or like, you know, high alpha reductase activity, usually we see other symptoms. Like we see maybe some hair loss on the head or hair growth where we don't want it, like on the face or in the body. And you know, this is really common also with PCOS. So usually we also see this related, integrally related to insulin issues. And we'll touch on blood sugar management, but the insulin androgen connection is huge and a major driver of acne. And with the estrogen dominance, like you mentioned, yeah, I usually see it a little bit more on the cheek. A lot of popular over-the-counter or like quote-unquote natural supplements that are targeted for acne contain something called DIM, which lowers estrogen. And for people who have estrogen dominance, it could help clear their acne or help improve that. However, you want to keep in mind that not everyone has estrogen dominance just because you have acne, and that DIM, because it lowers estrogen, if your estrogen is not high, it can cause estrogen to be too low, and that can cause other issues. So if you are taking any sort of, like, you know, popular, like, acne sort of supplement, check to see if the ingredients contain DIM and monitor that alongside, or monitor your estrogen levels to make sure they're not going too low.
Right. And the same when it comes down to androgen-based acne. You might have that jawline acne. You might not actually have high testosterone. It actually might just be a little bit of high 5-alpha reductase. So if you go to drop down your testosterone with something like spearmint or berberine or peony or Vitex or something like that, that might not be the approach for you. That might just be the fact that, and this is root cause medicine, there might be high cortisol and stress that's pushing down that 5-alpha that's causing that DHT to be a little bit more elevated, causing that jawline acne. So that's where it's important to work with a practitioner that's diving into the what's and the whys of why your hormones are off in the first place, because that's the key. Just because your hormones are off doesn't mean we just, like, throw, you know, the kitchen sink at it. We focus on, why are my hormones off? Because the hormones are responding to the internal or external environment. They are what's asking for help.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hormones are not the root cause. They're a reflection of another more upstream imbalance or dysfunction. And speaking of DHT too, like, I just want to say something that I think I learned this, like, a few years ago, and I still think it's very interesting that, you know, some people, they have, like, you know, normal testosterone levels. They don't have necessarily upregulated 5-alpha reductase activity, but they have a lot of DHT receptors in these sort of places, like along that sort of jawline. And that means that even though these levels are normal, they're very sensitive to any sort of fluctuations and can cause breakouts. So if you are one of those unlucky people, which I believe I am, just keep that in mind, that it still could be a DHT issue, even if your testosterone and 5-alpha reductase are fine.
Yeah, I find mine really gets pissed off in times of stress too. So that's another root cause, a hormonal root cause of acne is high cortisol, stress for sure. And I know I got in a car accident about a little over a month ago, and I kid you not, my skin had been so clear. And then getting in that car accident, it broke out for an entire week. So angry with, like, zits everywhere in different places. So if you are going through a stressful period, sometimes nothing changes. Your hormones are not off. It could just be the fact that you are dealing with a lot of stress. And with that, you have an increase in the androgens, increase in the androgen receptor sensitivity, and you can break out because of that.
Absolutely. I mean, even in stress, again, we've talked about this, can come from so many different forms. That's what I believe caused my pimple this morning. Is I think I might be sick, or, like, got some sort of, like, you know, cold or something. And so that stressed out my system and caused that breakout that tends to happen for me. So if you notice that your acne is correlated with stress at all, you know, there are obviously you can do what you can in terms of stress management, but you could also consider doing something like adaptogens, which are basically herbs that help mitigate your body's stress response. Some people respond really well to those. I also really like L-theanine, which is an amino acid, which is very calming. Lacey, what are your favorites there?
For calming the nervous system, I'm a big fan of ashwagandha. I like reishi mushroom, ashwagandha, magnolia, rhodiola, cordyceps. Those would be my favorites. I'm a big fan of L-theanine, but it doesn't really calm me enough. And then I'm a big fan of CBD oil. I find that that's super helpful in combination with reishi. So those are the top ones that I run to.
Yeah. Just don't put CBD oil on your skin unless you're 100% sure that you know all the ingredients and they're not pore clogging.
Oh yeah, for sure. I agree. And when it comes down to, I forgot to mention low estrogen as well, because low estrogen, you also see a damaged skin barrier, thinning of the skin. And I know a lot of people think, oh, acne, high estrogen. But if you have low estrogen too, that can also cause acne because you have dryness. And with dryness, you can have clogging. And your body sometimes, even when it's dry and you have that low estrogen, it can upregulate that sebum production. So hormones, definitely, you just got to don't test. I mean, don't guess. Just test. See what's up.
Yeah. And like, again, it's also the fluctuations that can cause issues too. So that's why a lot of women who are going through menopause or perimenopause, they start experiencing breakouts, which is so unfair. I remember like I was told that, you know, acne was just for teenagers and that by the time I like went to college, it would go away. But no, not only do we have this in adulthood, but you could have a resurgence again in your like late 40s, 50s due to those hormonal fluctuations.
Yeah, not looking forward to that at all, especially because progesterone kind of like lowers that 5-alpha reductase sensitivity and lowers that testosterone sensitivity. So if you lose that progesterone, whether you're, you know, sometimes it's hypothalamic amenorrhea, other times, of course, you're going into perimenopause, menopause, then you do have an increased risk of having that increased sebum production on your skin.
Yeah, good point.
One more thing I wanted to bring up, just because it sucks, is some people, they can have hyperkeratinization of their skin, which is basically rapid shedding of the skin cells. And that actually predisposes you to having more acne. So if you have, you can have a genetic predisposition to acne. So if your parents had a lot of acne or your siblings have a lot of acne issues, yes, that can actually be something that happens. And then of course, typically there's an underlying additional cause that worsens an acne-based state.
Yeah, which is so interesting, honestly.
Fascinating stuff. It's like, yeah. Why was I born in an acne-based family?
It's not fair.
Not fair. So, in regards to cortisol, we talked about that, hormonal imbalances. Let's talk about the supplements that can piss acne off, because I know a lot of people have done this, including myself.
Yes. The number one that comes to mind is biotin, which is found in so many hair, skin, nail supplements. Lacey, why is it that biotin, especially at high doses, makes people break out?
You know, I'm not really sure. I think it might upregulate sebum production. That might be the way it does it.
Yeah. I mean, I've dug into this before and I never really got a perfect answer. But I have found that, you know, if someone is starting a multivitamin or if they're on a multivitamin and they're breaking out, I almost always will pull them off and put them maybe on something that doesn't contain biotin or just supplement nutrients individually instead.
Yeah, the thing with the multivitamins is so important too, because there's a lot of multis that have more than just vitamins in it. It also can have herbs, and some people can be sensitive to herbs. For example, ashwagandha. I freaking love ashwagandha, but if you have higher end range testosterone, sometimes that can cause a little bit of acne. And then a big thing that I see a lot of people mistake is taking B12 for energy, and that can cause big acne flares if you're taking too much B12.
Yeah, with B12, I definitely think that's one thing you want to test in terms of supplementing. So I usually say test MMA, methylmalonic acid. It's a good marker for B12 status. And that could also help sort of guide you what type of B12 to take and how much. So definitely test with B12. Don't just randomly supplement.
Yeah, I agree. And then of course, I love me some vitamin D. I love me some zinc, but if you're taking too much, that can also cause acne. So I know zinc actually is used many times to reduce acne, especially because it helps to kind of like lower testosterone, prevents aromatase, which turns testosterone into estrogen, helps with that. But too much zinc can actually, for some people, cause acne.
Yeah, and one of the main reasons, too, is that zinc and copper compete for absorption. And copper is actually a really important nutrient involved in keeping healthy skin. So when there's an imbalance, that can cause that issue.
Yeah, fun stuff. Just be very careful, too, if you guys are using any herbals. Always got a question, what am I taking? How can that worsen my acne? And then just for people that already know, if you're working on your gut, if you're trying to work on your detox, your drainage and lymphatic pathways, sometimes that's going to increase your acne as you start healing, because your body's getting rid of the pathogens and your toxins, and that's going to purge via your skin as well. Your skin is one of your largest detox organs. So it doesn't mean that you got to stop that. It just means that you're getting rid of things and your body's trying to like clear it out via your skin.
Yeah, and hopefully your practitioner is communicating that to you, that dye-off could be causing acne. And, you know, taking binders like charcoal, for example, or clay can help mitigate that if you're having a really bad dye-off acne spell.
Right. Now, Food triggers. Let's talk about what foods can trigger acne. Other than dairy.
I mean, other than dairy, I mean, dairy is the biggest one for sure. Listen, alcohol. Basically, you know, you want to think anything inflammatory, right? And alcohol, unfortunately, is inflammatory, especially once you're getting to like 2, 3, 4 drinks. So, you know, with people struggling with alcohol, I really encourage you to keep it to a minimum, you know, use it maybe just in social events here and there. But definitely like that nightly glass of wine, that like 3, 4, 5 time a week cocktail is not doing you any favors, especially if it's paired with any sort of sugary mixer. That's just going to cause a blood sugar issue as well. So I see that a lot as a common culprit.
Yeah, anything with added sugars in general, and even artificial sweeteners can be a big demon for acne, and unfortunately, sometimes even stevia for people doing too much stevia. So those would be definitely things to keep in mind. Then there's, of course, for some people, gluten and wheat. We know that gluten can cause, quote unquote, heightened intestinal permeability or leaky gut for some people. So especially if you're gluten intolerant, that's going to cause systemic inflammation, which can cause acne, skin issues, rashes, eczema, hives, even rosacea. But that's something. And then, unfortunately, some people have issues with eggs, which are glorious.
Oh, I know. And I'm so sorry for those people. Usually you can resume eating eggs after you do some healing into the underlying reason, which almost always is a histamine issue. But sometimes you do need to cut that out short term until you clear up.
Yeah, I know, speaking from experience, I used to have like 4 eggs a day. I'm not even joking. I freaking love eggs. And with, of course, being stressed, I had then heightened intestinal permeability. So I had to cut back on the eggs and then heal my gut for a while. And it was the saddest thing in the world. But then, of course, with healing my gut, I was able to add all those things back in.
Yeah, it's amazing how that works.
I know, right? Any other foods, food triggers?
Those are the biggest ones. I know for some people also like really spicy food can cause acne breakouts. So that's just something to keep in mind. I'm sorry if you're one of those people.
Yeah, definitely spicy foods, chocolate, peppermint, alcohol, citrus fruits, even anything high histamine that can induce or worsen any type of rosacea flare as well. So that can include pastoral papular, I can never pronounce that, but that acne that comes from rosacea, that can occur as well with those things. And that also, sometimes there's random things that you're also just like, you have issues with. For example, for me, I can't do like a lot of just regular tomatoes. If I eat a tomato, like a big tomato or multiple of the small little baby tomatoes, for some reason, I just break out, and it happens to my mom too. So sometimes there's just things that your body's like, nope, I don't like this.
Yeah, that's me with apples.
No way. That's you with apples?
Yeah, apples make me break out.
That's so sad.
I know. Another thing too is for some people also like foods that are high in iodine can cause acne. So like seaweed salad is one, like sushi. So that's something to keep in mind as well. But Lacey, how do you advise someone to go about figuring out what foods to cut out and how to go about those changes?
Oh, I forgot to mention chocolate too. Even if it's dairy-free chocolate. But the way that I like to approach things is I try and focus on how can we get as much variety in the diet as possible. And so I always try and work on the gut first, the gut lining, supporting the gut, getting rid of the pathogens. And then I will, of course, start with, let's limit the things that we know are going to potentially cause you an acne flare. So let's limit for you the added sugars. Let's take away dairy first. Let's see how you do with that with an anti-inflammatory diet. Of course, stay away from those fatty, greasy foods, those processed vegetable oils. But my approach is let's keep as much in the diet first as we can. And then if we need to take away, you know, the gluten, the eggs, and, you know, all these other things, then we'll do that.
Yep. I am absolutely in the same camp. And let me also just say, a word of caution with food sensitivity tests.
Yes.
They are not accurate. They are not reliable. Please don't use them. There's like maybe a time and a place for very specific types of food intolerance testing. And we can go all into food intolerance testing in more detail later. But do not use those to guide your like an elimination diet.
I completely agree. I've seen that time and time again cause orthorexia, which is basically just like, you know, thinking too much about your health and being scared of things, whether that's internally what you're consuming or externally, like being fearful of all the things in your environment, that can definitely happen. So I am with you. I always like to say, focus on your gut health first, because most of the time, if there's a gut issue, it's gonna manifest in some shape or form of fake, what I call pseudo food intolerance too.
Absolutely. I love that.
So glad that you mentioned that. So glad you mentioned that. And thank you also for mentioning the iodine and the kelp too, because I know some people, they think, oh, let me help my thyroid by adding in some iodine drops. And they're like, why am I breaking out? Well, it's because iodine can also cause you to break out.
Yeah. I mean, iodine is, oh my God, it's such an interesting and really misunderstood topic as regards to thyroid health. But if you live in America and you eat any food out or any food that's, you know, from the grocery store, you're probably okay on iodine. It's very rare that there's an iodine issue. So I would definitely not just supplement or try and get excess iodine without actually doing a proper testing for that.
Yeah, I agree. Now let's talk about, say that somebody has a practitioner like you or I, because we're thebomb.com. Let's just, you know, say that, say they're working with us and we want to work on supporting detox and drainage pathways, because let's be real, that's very important when you're going through any shape or form of gut, heavy metal, mold, in general, any toxin based issue. Let's go over what are the top things that we could do to support detox and drainage to prevent that from occurring.
Yeah. So first of all, you want to think about all the different parts of our body that are involved in that process, right? So, you know, liver, kidneys, lungs, lymphatic system, gut, and skin are all really the main sort of detox drainage parts of our body. And so things that we could do. So first of all, we want to lower our toxin load, right? Which is a huge topic. But that is, I think, the number one most important thing, right? Because if we're constantly thinking of detoxing, but we're also retoxing, we're going to be like going nowhere, you know? So that's a really important step. What else would you say?
Oh my gosh, you got to support all the detox pathways. And the easiest way is poop on a daily basis, right?
Oh, yes.
Get your movement in for your lymphatic system, get your water in for your kidneys. So with detox pathways, like I want you guys to think colon, so poop, kidneys, so water, lymphatic system, so of movement, that also includes things that you could do like dry brushing. And then of course, respiratory system and then skin. So I love saying you can sweat. If you want to try and get like a good 5 to 10 minute sweat, you should be sweating a little bit in your workouts in general. That could be helpful. And then just get on a walk, get out in nature, get some fresh air. For the liver too, I'm a big fan of focusing on liver detoxification rich foods. So I want you to think cruciferous vegetables, leafy greens, dandelion, burdock, things like that. Beets are also great. And then castor oil packs, which I know we both are a fan of. You could just put that under your right rib cage, let it sit there for an hour. I love Queen of Thrones. Anya, do you use the Queen of Thrones castor oil pack?
I do. Yeah. And I usually say, you can like grow into sleeping with it. Just don't wear nice pajamas. I've ruined multiple pairs of nice pajamas because I was a little too ambitious, because it does leak a little bit. So just wear clothes you don't really care about.
Yeah, I fully agree. So love me some castor oil packs. And then I'm a big fan, if this is only if you were going through a major gut detox drainage protocol, or if you have really bad acne, you can add in a good liver support formula that has a good amount of N-acetylcysteine, milk thistle, and then a little bit of tuca as well. So I have my favorite products, but NAC is one of the best things that you could do, in my opinion, for your immune system, your hormones, your follicular health, for your ovaries, and of course, detoxification.
And if you want to be extra like me, you could do IV glutathione, which is a big, big, big antioxidant push that can really help if your toxic burden is overloaded and you have a lot of oxidative stress.
I wish I could say I could do an IV. I think I'd pass out. Quite possible.
I'm a baby. It gets easier for sure. I've been doing it a lot lately and loving it.
good. And then in regards to other things that we could do to support our detox pathways, I'm a big fan too, and I know you are, in regards to food focus and then lifestyle work, like the walking, the castor oil packs, things like that. But you can also incorporate other supplementation as well. So Anya, what other supplementation do you like, other than, like I mentioned, NACE, milk thistle, Tudka? I like the dandelion, the burdock blend. So there's a lot of good, quote unquote, like liver detox blends, but what else do you like?
Those are honestly my biggest ones. I'd say like maybe another thing could be like other sort of bitters, but I like to do food first with that. So things like arugula. I really love arugula for bitters. Apple cider vinegar also can be really helpful. Watercress. Those are all some of my favorites for sure. Things like turmeric and ginger. Also, you could do food, you could do teas, you could do supplements for that as well.
And you know what I love is the Bible even told us in like to do bitters with the non-yeast base in regards to the Passover. So I love looking back and I'm like, ooh, they were already supporting their liver. And amazing.
Ooh, that is interesting.
I'm a weirdo. But yes, so love those things. Detox drainage, we talked all about that. So cool. What are the other things that we missed for acne? Anything else?
I think the biggest one would be blood sugar.
Yes.
Blood sugar management. So, you know, having any sort of blood sugar dysfunction, going too high, going too low, especially going too high, though, is going to cause acne for sure. You know, it triggers inflammation. It also affects your hormones. So that's a really, really important thing. And, you know, that really you could do with a food-focused approach first. There are certain supplements that can be helpful, but you know, I really just love using dietary strategies in order to improve that.
Yeah, please. We want smart snacks. I like to say, make sure that your carb has a friend, or, you know, it's not naked by itself. So have a banana with peanut butter, or have your, if you're gluten-free, your gluten-free pretzels with some hummus or avocado. Just make sure you're never eating a naked carb, and have the steady, consistent meals like every 3 to 5 hours. I don't suggest eating every 2 hours. If you just eat, of course, that's going to stabilize your blood sugar, but that's also keeping insulin spiked for a long period of time. And that can also manifest in acne, lead down the road of course, type 2 diabetes. So that's very important. And then just know that not staying hydrated is also a trigger to cause cortisol and, you know, a little bit of blood sugar issues too, because cortisol impacts your blood sugar. So please stay hydrated throughout the day too.
And guys, if you haven't caught on, all these things are so interconnected, right? So balancing your blood sugar helps improve your hormones. Also, making sure that your detox pathways are supported by staying hydrated helps balance your blood sugar. And, you know, they're all these systems in our body are all interacting with one another, which is why it really requires this comprehensive approach.
Yeah, I completely agree. So as you guys already obviously know, we are all about working from within and externally. It's very much a holistic, but a functional and integrative approach for healing acne.
Yes, all about that.
So we did not necessarily go over topicals. I want to end this podcast with us just going over our favorite topicals, not necessarily maybe for barrier repair, but our favorite topicals for healing acne based on the types of acne.
Yeah. So, you know, when it comes to that non-inflammatory acne, if your skin barrier can tolerate it, I like acids, especially mandelic acid. Is one that I've become a huge fan of because it is a little gentler, but still pretty effective. So that's probably my favorite. What would you say next after that?
My favorite topical. So if we're just talking about the one to start with, I either start with salicylic acid or benzoyl peroxide. I find that the benzoyl peroxide is typically good for more of the pustule or the papule-based acne. Salicylic acid is my best friend for anything that's more of like the whiteheads or the blackheads, especially blackheads, big time. I like to start with those. And if those don't do well, then I like to transition into, okay, maybe let's do a little bit of niacinamide, which I'm a big fan of reducing inflammation and supporting the integrity of the skin as well. Retinol, I also like diving into, but I like to focus on salicylic acid, benzoyl peroxide, barrier repair. And then if we need to add in retinol, I will.
Yeah. And with retinol, I would go really low and slow. I also am a big fan of sandwiching retinol with something like hyaluronic acid. So putting it on before and after can really help, or any other moisturizer, to reduce any sort of irritation and keep your barrier healthy.
And those that don't know, the reason retinol works, and it's like the reason why they use tret or retinol, is because it upregulates the resurfacing of your skin. So it helps things to not clog in your skin more. But there can be, of course, purging that occurs with that, irritation, dryness, all that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then go ahead.
I was going to say that with that purging, which is why it's important to make sure you're kind of balancing it with some gentle exfoliation on alternate days to help make sure you're not getting that closed comedones.
Yes, or overusing active like salicylic acid, benzoyl peroxide, even like the glycolics, PHAs, you know, lactic acid, like you mentioned, can be too harsh with retinol. And then you guys, a lot of the times that you're going to go to a dermatologist, they're not going to say, let's look at your hormones. Let's look at your nutrient status. What's your diet like? They're going to try and prescribe you most likely a topical, or they're going to try and prescribe you an oral antibiotic, which, please, if at all possible, never take an oral antibiotic for your acne. Figure out what's going on in your gut that's causing that acne, because taking that antibiotic is going to destroy your beneficial bacteria. And then most likely it's actually not even going to work long term, because that's just going to kill some good guys and bad guys off. And then the root cause was never addressed.
Absolutely. I'd even caution with topical, like those like antibiotic acne wipes that a lot of dermatologists prescribe. Again, your skin has a microbiome. Right. So just like you want to just pop an antibiotic willy nilly for your own internal health, you don't want to do the same thing for your skin.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's so hard. Acne, there's so many different causes, so many different triggers, and so much that you can do. And it's becoming so hard because there's, just like in the functional medicine world, there's dermatologists, there's estheticians, there's quote unquote skincare consultants. There's so many different things, and your opinion can get lost in the sea of other people's opinions, or the truth can get lost in the sea of other people's opinions. So the most important thing is, if you're struggling, you know, make sure you're diving into the root causes, and then just find somebody that you can trust.
Yeah. And I think last thing I want to say too is, like, listen, I'm not going to dismiss how uncomfortable and how difficult acne can be on your self-esteem, but also know that we are always our biggest critic. Just, you know, try not to fixate on the healing process. Skin takes time. It usually takes at least 3 months to really get clear. So just keep that in mind. Don't use a magnifying mirror. Don't fixate too much. If you're doing this sort of process, maybe take pictures every few weeks just to check in, but try your best not to fixate.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you are way more than your skin. Even if you have acne and rosacea and you think it looks bad, nobody cares about that stuff. I like to say, like, and I have to speak to myself sometimes, like, you're the person that cares about it. Nobody else cares about it. They are looking at you as a beautiful human. They're looking at your eyes and your smile and like how you treat others. So please just do remember that you are not your acne. The acne is just on the surface of your skin.
And also, everything that you see on social media and celebrities and TV, et cetera, it's all so heavily like photoshopped and edited and cover up. I've never seen a human being in real life with glass skin. So let's also just set the expectation that glass skin, that's not really the goal. We want the clearest, happiest skin that you could healthfully achieve, but that's rarely ever going to be absolutely flawless.
Mm-hmm. Completely agree. And unfortunately, now there are video filters. So just keep that in mind. And there's a lot of, you can change your lighting easily. You could try this on your own. Just take your phone and go take photos, or look at yourself in your phone in different periods of light. And that can cause shadows, worsen how your skin looks, make you look like you're maybe 55 years old or 20 years old. Like, it could definitely change things.
Oh, so scary.
Well, you guys, this was so fun, Anya. I know we were like, oh, we're going to make it short and sweet, but like, I think this was fantastic. And I hope you guys learned a lot and got a lot of insight in regards to how to heal your acne.
Yes, I hope so too. And yeah, acne, this is such a huge topic. I think we could literally talk about it all day.
Yeah, no, we could. But I'm going to end with saying the most important thing that you could do for your acne is focus on stress management, adapting your diet, and keeping your barrier supported.
I could not agree more.
Awesome. Okay. Well, you guys, all our info is going to be in the description below. And then our next podcast, we will come out with, we have a little other extra topics. So we're excited, but I hope you guys have a great rest of your day.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.